How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day, especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth, you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth, they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth, you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza. Melis.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. We are here for you every week. Thanks for making us part of your regular rotation. I am John Corrales, here by myself amongst the Rain and Jays, joined today by Locked On Podcast Network brother from the Locked On Wizards podcast, Ben Standig, who also wrote a piece for FanRag Sports on the Celtics. And the headline is, how much stronger have the Celtics become? So let's welcome Ben in and have this discussion of how good are the Boston Celtics. Ben, thanks for joining us for a little bit here.
John, pleasure to be on. You were cool with me a couple weeks ago when I was looking for some help doing some projects. So definitely glad to, I don't know if this is returning the favor, but definitely glad to talk with you about the about what's going on with all of our teams.
Yeah, that's what we do here on the Locked On Podcast Network. We're all one big happy family. I say that because I don't know how many fans are going to like what you wrote, but it's not a hit piece or anything like that. I want to make it sound like that. The fact is that coming off of the summer league, where Celtics fans are very high on a bunch of guys, this is kind of a check. It's good to have outside perspective from teams, from people who aren't covering the Celtics on a regular basis, who aren't fully invested, have any sort of fan interest or anything like that. So it's good to get kind of the outside look and see how that jives with what we're seeing. So I think the crux of what people are reacting to from the outside is the Celtics added Gordon Hayward. That's nice. And actually, you know what? I'm going to read the quote that you had from Jeff Zilgit from USA Today Sports. Quote, the addition of Hayward is nice, but the subtraction of some of those other players takes away some of the depth that makes Boston so good. So let's start there. Is that a feeling that you have? Do you think the Celtics gave away too much to make the signing of Gordon Hayward that impactful?
So let's look at this from the way I look at the world. I'm looking at it from the perspective of the Washington Wizards. That's where my thoughts come from. The people who hit me up on Twitter or elsewhere, that's where they're coming at. And you know what? I mean, the people on my side of the aisle are not thrilled with the Wizards' offseason. It's been rather meh. They didn't have a first-round pick, let alone the number three pick, like, you know, to get Jason Tatum. They signed two free agents who played a combined 54 games last year. That doesn't compare to Gordon Hayward, right? So people on this end are like, oh, boy, the Wizards, they're falling back. They're losing ground. The Celtics are making all these kinds of moves. And so when I was out in Las Vegas trying to get perspective from people on the Wizards, part of my discussion was, well, where do you think the Wizards rank in relation to Boston? Again, obviously, you know, they played 11 times last year. The home team won all 11 games. Boston did win the playoff series, of course, and finished higher in the regular season. But, you know, 11 times the home team wins, it seems pretty even. So where are the Wizards now? And my take sort of has been, look, I think that the Wizards haven't done a ton. They've done a couple little things with the Tim Frazier's of the world. if maybe that helps boost up enough, if because their bench was so bad, maybe it keeps them a little fresher, their starters a little fresher. It helps the Wizards. So in relation to Boston, though, when you look at it head to head, the Wizards had the better starting lineup last year, but the Celtics had more depth. And so when I started looking at it head to head, you know, the back of the Boston bench now is a bunch of kids, which isn't to say that's not great for the long term, and maybe guys play better now, but it's hard to project a bunch of 21, 22-year-olds or even less than that when we're talking about Tatum and Jaylen Brown, that what exactly you're going to get from them next year. I'm not talking about 5 years, but just next year. And then obviously with Gordon Hayward, he's a great player, but you lose Avery Bradley. Avery Bradley, from the Wizards' perspective, was a huge pain in the butt because he's guarding John Wall and Bradley Beal, their two best players, so on and so on. So, and then I was there with Brad Stevens. I guess he spoke, I don't know which game it was, one of their summer league games. And he, you know, he doesn't say a ton, but one of the things he said was, you know, we're going to have to get right into training camp because we've got a lot of new pieces to figure out. So from my perspective, and I think this was the perspective I tried to show in the article from other people, is it's not that Boston isn't a good team. It's just that the noise of the Hayward and Tatum thing sort of is maybe hiding the fact that there were so many changes that it's almost kind of hard to know exactly how much better Boston is, if they are at all.
No, that's true, because I think the Celtics are, generally speaking, better than they were last year, just from a sheer talent perspective. You've added Gordon Hayward, who is an upgrade over Avery Bradley. Not in we know that Avery Bradley's one of the best on-ball defenders, but he's good offensively, but Gordon Hayward is tremendous offensively, and no one's really going to dispute that aspect of it. But I get why people are saying, well, you're taking a step back in one direction. And the other key guys that the Celtics are going to have in their rotation weren't here last year. Marcus Morris came over in a trade. Jason Tatum, they drafted. I think they're going to look to him for like 20 minutes a game. So we're not sure. Aaron Baines is a guy that's we're expecting a lot of things, but there is a lot of projection from Boston side. We're projecting that Jaylen Brown is going to take a step forward and potentially be a starter or at least a 30-minute a game guy. So I can see from the outside that there's a do you really know what you have kind of thing. I wonder if how you see the Eastern Conference playing into this. Like, we judge everything by wins and losses, right? So the East is significantly worse. The Bulls, the Pacers, both lost their superstars. There are bad teams. Most of the bad teams are in the East. And Brad Stevens is notorious for spending November, December, part of January experimenting.
Right.
So I think some of this stuff that you're talking about might be offset by the Eastern Conference being bad, because Brad Stevens can experiment and still win. He can still beat some of these teams. And then once he figures out his rotations and gets into that February, March, April, May, where he really locks in and the Celtics typically go in a run under Stevens, that I think kind of mitigates that learning curve, I guess.
And look, I think it'll be fair. I mean, and pretty much any time I mention Brad Stevens somewhere, I talk about that he, you know, he's a real Jedi, and I believe that. I mean, that guy is crazy good, right? So you've got that going on. So I don't doubt that Brad Stevens will figure out how to make things work. I'm convinced that will happen. You know, like I said, like trust me, I get it. Like, if I was in Boston's shoes, you lost to Cleveland in the finals. You make the big move for Hayward. You're looking ahead. You're looking at Cleveland. How do you compare to them, right? And I totally get it for that. Get that. So, like I said, from my angle, when I look at it from the Wizards' perspective, and you sort of go that head, those sort of head-to-head matchups, you know, if that starting lineup for Boston is what Gordon Hayward, Jay Crowder, Isaiah Thomas, Al Horford, and Aaron Baines against the Wizards, I mean, that kind of means Isaiah Thomas has to guard Wall or Beal this time, right? Last time they could in the playoffs, they could hide him against Otto Porter a little bit, but I don't think you can do that. You can't really have Gordon Hayward guarding John Wall, right? So that alone seems like an advantage for the Wizards, which isn't to say that, like, the Wizards still don't have some concerns about their bench. They do. Well, they have to, you know, I like the Jody Meek signing, but he's played 39 games in two seasons, so who knows what you're going to get out of him. And if he's not there, they have much in the way of scoring off the bench. But, you know, if you're telling me John Wall gets to go up against Isaiah Thomas consistently, I think that's a positive for the Wizards. That wasn't something, you know, with Avery Bradley last year, that wasn't an issue. Now, if you put Marcus Smart in the game, and, you know, who are you taking? You take out Aaron Baines, to say, arguably. That's cool. Al Horford lit the Wizards up last year playing away from the basket, and the Wizards had a tough time matching him up. And I don't quite know how they would do that. But I know Al Horford doesn't, in theory, want to play tons of minutes at center. So, you know, it's sort of like I look at those kind of matchups, and like I said, I'm coming at this from the Wizards' perspective. You know, people keep saying to me, hey, are the Wizards falling back? I'm like, well, I don't know. We'll see. I don't necessarily think so, though, because, again, when I look at the matchups with Boston, like, I'm not looking at Cleveland. That's a whole other story.
Right, right.
I only look at Boston because of that head-to-head series and how close it was. And that's where I think that some of these things are all of a sudden interesting from that perspective.
Yeah, the whole starting lineup thing has been an interesting debate for us. And specifically when it comes to Washington, I don't know. I think they might like the idea of putting Horford at the five and going with either Smart or Jaylen Brown at the two. I think that's where most of us have settled, which of course means that in October, something completely different is going to happen. We're going to go like, oh, Brad Stevens is thinking on a completely different level. But right now it seems like Marcus Smart or Jaylen Brown is going to be the starter alongside Isaiah Thomas. And it's going to be up to that person, whomever it is, to guard one of the other team's big time guards. And, you know, if it's Jaylen Brown, does he have the foot speed to stay in front of John Wall? I mean, who does, really? Even Avery Bradley had trouble with that matchup. But either way, I mean, there's always going to be that one team that gives you a tough matchup. I think that the Celtics, once they figure things out and get the rotations down, they'll be okay. And yeah, we are looking ahead to Cleveland because we're looking at who do we start? Do we put Baines in against Tristan Thompson? Like, I'm already thinking about that matchup right there. But it's mid-July. Like, we're still kind of like we said at the beginning, projecting. We're projecting out. So, but back to the thing that you wrote, I'm just trying to bring in some of the, like, some of the people that you've talked to and are, or even with you, is there a feeling like Boston might be vulnerable just early? Is that kind of like what you're hoping for, that the Celtics, even though they've made the improvements, that they are vulnerable early and you can kind of maybe storm out to a lead and things get a little bit closer later on, but you make that early run, you kind of go off on a big lead in early in the season and hope to kind of keep it?
I guess there's a little bit of that. I mean, right, you know, you have each roster turnover and Ace and Gordon Hayward. I mean, you know right, if Hayward and Bain start, that's 4% of the starting lineup that wasn't even on the team last year, that type of thing. So I think there's a little bit of that. I think here's what I kind of think it is on some level. It's just a hype thing. I mean, Boston was, from the moment the season essentially ended, Boston was front and center of everything. Or not even the season ending. Boston wins. I mean, the day after beating the Wizards, right, the Celtics win the draft lottery to get the number one pick. So already it's like, oh, wow, look at Boston. And then they trade that pick to get off because that's what Boston, you know, needs more assets to play with down the line. And then you're in the mix for Paul George. Granted, that didn't work out, but then, you know, then get Gordon Hayward. So it's been a constant Boston talk fest for weeks and weeks. And I think from that, I think people maybe when they look at it are like, well, you know, they're definitely good, but maybe the hype, it's not the same hype level that is. Because I think part of what I'm sure you have to deal with this all the time, it's two tracks simultaneously. It's the now track, and you have all this stuff going on for the future. And I think that's what makes it so interesting. I'm sure if I was in your position doing the Locked On Celtics podcast, it's like, wow, look at all this stuff they have to play with. But it isn't all for now. And that's where I think it's sort of interesting. Because I'm only, like I said, the point of this article is only about this year. I even saying there, if we're looking ahead to 5 years, there's no way to argue that Boston's not positioned as well as anybody could be, especially what you figure on at some point will fade. We'll see if that ever happens. But yeah, I mean, it's sort of interesting just because I think some people separate these two tracks that are happening. But in terms of the rail, how much are those young guys really going to help this year?
Yeah, I guess that's the big question, because you look at what the Celtics have added. Mostly, it's been a bunch of rookies, and yeah, I agree. Like for this year, there are questions. There are questions. Can Jaylen Brown be what we in Boston think he can be? I mean, I'm already pushing him into the potential starting role. Can Jason Tatum? We saw Jason Tatum in Summer League, and he looked great. I mean, he looked great to me. I don't know. You watched him a couple of games. Did you get a good sense of how he looks right now? Or did anybody give you any sort of sense of what they think about him?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't go see I didn't see Dennis Smith play live, and by the time I left is when Lonzo Ball took off. But when I was there, the games that I saw, I thought Jason Tatum was as good as any rookie I saw. I mean, I as somebody who covered Glenn Rice Jr. and he won the Summer League MVP, and I was convinced that he was going to be the next big key reserve off the Wizards bench, I've learned to temper what I witnessed at Summer League. But yes, I mean, knowing where Jason Tatum is coming from and what he brings, I thought he looked really impressive, and he absolutely could be a help this year, no doubt.
Yeah, so when we look at that from the Boston perspective, I think we're a little excited. And it's good to maybe temper some of that excitement to say, all right, even if Tatum ends up being pretty good, he's not going to be pretty good right out of the gate. We don't think like that. I don't think it's going to take him a little bit of a learning curve. If he comes out and has a rookie of the year type of start, like that's going to be amazing. I think it's going to be an adjustment. So, but we are looking for things out of him. We're looking, like, you hear Brad Stevens talking about Semi Ojeleye, and, you know, they just signed Abdel Nader, and they brought in Ante Zizic, and they bring in these guys that we're all kind of, like, hoping they give minutes. And that's a bunch of rookies, and like you were alluding to, in a couple years, 2-3 years, we're hoping that most of those rookies pan out into something good, either good to great, somewhere in that range, and they can kind of be the next wave. But for this year, I can see there's going to be kind of a slow start. So from your perspective then, just at this point, middle of the summer, we're just kind of trying to guess a little bit. How far ahead did the Celtics move, or did they move ahead of where they were last year? Like in context, like we know it's Cleveland, regardless of how the season ends, wins and losses wise, Cleveland is the goal. Cleveland's the top dog. And then it's still Washington and Toronto along with Boston. But last season, I think they were all kind of very even. Do you still feel like they're even, or do you think Boston's kind of moved ahead?
You know, look, I mean, last year, what, 4 games separated the first seed and the fourth seed. And to give Boston some credit, Boston finishes as the top seed despite having a bunch of injuries. The Wizards, on the other hand, their starting five was intact essentially the whole season. They did lose Jan Mahimi for a bunch of the time, but, relative to Boston, you know, that wasn't nearly as bad as what the Celtics endured. So based on that, you figure the Celtics, you know, good shape of the Wizards, even with all the changes. I don't really know what to make of Toronto anymore. I'm not a big Serge Ibaka guy. I don't know if I see them having the eye of the tiger in the playoffs. I mean, maybe they just got bad luck this year playing Cleveland, but... You know, like I said with the Wizards, they didn't make any big moves, but if Tim Frazier and Jody Meeks in particular can give the Wizards 12 minutes each off the bench, that means that saves John Wall and Bradley Beal over the course of 82 games in the playoffs. I mean, I'm sure you guys last year were just salivating every time Wall and Beal sat.
Oh, we loved it. We loved it.
Oh, yeah. How could you not? I mean, it was driving me crazy watching Brent Jennings in the playoffs, and he was better than what everything else they had. So that says a lot. But here's the question I guess I sort of have on that front. So while I can sort of objectively look at it and say, look, I think Boston can probably finish ahead. One thing that was brought up to me a couple times in Vegas, I mentioned a little in the article, is what do we make of the Isaiah Thomas factor in that he's going into a contract year. Last year he was the clear focal point of the offense, but now Gordon Hayward's coming in. Isaiah Thomas, this is going to be whatever contract he gets, will be the biggest one of his career. And is there any sense, any fear of Isaiah Thomas might look like this year? Is there a sense that he could maybe go off the rails a little bit, looking for himself a little too much?
No, I think that he's just going to keep doing what he does. There's what he did last season. I mean, he carried the offense for a long stretch of time. And I think just adding better players around him makes him better. you know, he can get to the rim a lot with a lot cleaner lanes with those guys around him, with Gordon Hayward next to him. He could play off the ball more with Gordon Hayward next to him. So I don't think he's worried about his numbers going down or anything like that. I think if you are the main guy and everybody looks to him as the main guy, then if you are the main guy on the conference finalist again and knocking on the door of the finals, you're going to get paid. He's going to get paid plenty of money. Now, I've had kind of conversations with people. Is he going to get that full max? He's going to get $30+ million a year. He's going to get the Kyle Lowry, you know, 3-year, $100 million type of deal. Or will he take a little bit less and maybe do 4 years or 4 years plus a player option to have a little bit more stability in his life and maybe do 4 years, $100 million or 5 years, $125-$130 million, still getting an average annual value of $25 million, still the Brinks truck for him, but maybe a little bit less to kind of lessen the blow if the Celtics come to him and say, would you be interested in that? Kind of help us avoid maybe paying a little bit too much tax, because they'll be a taxpayer soon enough, and they still have to pay Marcus Smart. They still have, eventually they'll have to pay Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and all those guys. A lot of money is going to be spent by the Boston Celtics ownership over the next few years. I think a lot of it will be spent on Isaiah Thomas. They seem to be building a team that has a bunch of length in part to help Isaiah Thomas do what he does. He's a special player, even at that height. They're going to put big guys around him to help mitigate the defensive liability that he might be, and they're going to put a bunch of shooters around him to help him get to the lane, and he's shown that he'll find the shooters out there if they're out there. He'll force a couple of shots, but every big time scorer does. So I'm not worried about him. I think if Isaiah gives us what he did last season, everything's going to be just fine.
Hi, you've reached the High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my family's going to a tailgate, and I want our style to stand out from the crowd.
Just go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, Old Navy's got all the latest fall styles. Plus, during Old Navy's colossal sale, you'll save up to 50% off store-wide.
Did you say up to 50% off?
I did, so don't sit on the sidelines. Old Navy has the perfect pants from $19, stylish dresses from $15, and comfy tees for the family from just $6 right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com.
We're cheering for Old Navy.
High Fashion, Old Navy. Valid 10-2 to 10-10. Select styles only.
What about you guys? Are you guys afraid of John Wall? He hasn't signed his extension yet, has he?
He has not. That has been discussed a little bit. everybody's taking a wait-and-see approach on that. I mean, he said a few weeks ago that he was going to be patient with it. And then at some point, at halftime, and, you know, said, hey, what's up? What's up? He's like, you know, just trying to put myself in the best position. Everybody knows where I want to be, yada, 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 but we'll see. You know, look, I think John Wall sees going around the league. Everybody's getting these big threes. Some guys are leaving to put themselves in position. And, you know, I have a straight chance to get a ring. I mean, the Wizards could reach the Eastern Conference Finals, but it's hard to imagine them beating LeBron. I mean, that pretty much goes for everybody in the East. So, you know, I think he sees that, and I think he's pondering. I didn't think anything is possible, but it wouldn't stun me at all if he doesn't do anything and goes into next year, next offseason with 1 year left on his deal, and then things get super interesting.
That would be super interesting. That would be. So now, how do you think – so you think if the Wizards – and the Celtics match up now, is it the same thing? Is it a home court thing? Or do you think the Celtics have done enough to maybe win a series in six rather than seven? Or do you think the Wizards can go out there and win the series?
You know what? I mean, like I said, like Martin Gortat, for example. Martin Gortat was very effective all last season. Double-doubles, played every game, you know, super consistent. And, you know, I don't think he's even terrible in the playoffs or anything, but, you know, he's the type of big man that is just not built for this era, right? Horford shot like over 50% from three last year, so on and so on. So, you know, what does Marcin Gortat look like towards the end of the year? But because he's, I think they're going to be, but simultaneously, what do the Wizards do about that type of matchup? Jan Mahimi wasn't healthy in the playoffs, so maybe he's healthy, gives you a little more on the defensive end, but he's not really guarding Horford at the three-point line. I don't know if the Wizards have totally fixed that problem. But on the other hand, you know, you go back to that game seven, Scott Brooks played John Wall and Bradley Beal, you know, 87 minutes in a 48-minute game, it felt like. I mean, he played them the whole way. He tightened his rotation to like seven guys. Kelly Oubre essentially didn't even play. And I think that had to hurt them. I mean, John Wall missed his last 11 shots, tired legs, you know, no excuses, but tired legs, I think, played a big factor. So again, now if you tell me that Tim Frazier and Jody Meeks are there, yeah, those aren't big moves. But if now you're telling me John Wall and Bradley Beal for a game seven have fresher legs because these guys have been helping them, I think they can win that game. I mean, look, I mean, I think everybody on this end feels they blew at least one of those first two games last year in Boston when they had some pretty big leads. The having that lousy bench was part of that factor. So I don't view it as of today, July 16th, that the Wizards couldn't get it done against Boston. If Jason Tatum turns into something amazing, if Martin Gortat falls off the map, if Jody Meeks can't play, then, you know, then we can have this conversation again, and hopefully we will, and maybe I'll have a different tune. But right now, I think the Wizards can get it done, even though I would agree Boston is probably the number two team in the East behind Cleveland. I have one last question for you.
Oh, you're okay, sure.
All right, you guys, the Celtics just waived Demetrius Jackson, and I know in and of itself that's not going to change the balance of power, right? But he's a second-round pick, and this is like, how many picks have the Celtics now waived in the last just like a couple of years? I know there was R.J. Hunter and Ben Bentel.
They waived Bentel. They waived Demetrius Jackson. They had there was a guy, Marcus.
Marcus Thornton.
Marcus Thornton, yes. Yeah, so they had Thornton that they had stashed overseas. They waived him. Bentel was waived pretty quickly. This year they waived Jordan Mickey just now and Jackson to make way for their new crop of picks. So what are we at, five over the past two seasons?
The only reason I was bringing that up is the Wizards have traded away all their picks in recent years. In the last eight rounds, so 4 years, they've only had one player who's actually played for them, Kelly Oubre. For the second year in a row, they had no picks. And people around here are unbelievably annoyed by that development. But I'm sort of curious, like Boston's gone the other way, has a bazillion picks. But see, they keep waiving them. And I guess you're doing it to get Gordon Hayward and things like that. But at the same point, it feels like, man, can't you do something with them rather than just taking these guys and cutting them? I was just sort of curious if there was any frustration on Celtics' part or the fans' part of sort of like, hey, why do we have all these picks and just let them walk?
Yeah, it's not the R.J. Hunter one was a bit frustrating because he was a first-round pick. And I know he was the 28th pick, but still, a first-round pick that was waived before you had to waive him, you know, that was an interesting scenario. But look, they've got a lot of these picks. They've made how many picks over the course of, I mean, it's at some point you can't keep them all, and you can package them, I suppose. And I'm sure that Danny Ainge has been trying to kind of package these picks and maybe kick the can down the road. I'll give you two of these seconds for a second down the road or whatever. But how many teams are going to do that? How many teams really are going to help the Boston Celtics keep all of these assets? They don't want to have them keep the assets, because if somebody's out there that might like Demetrius Jackson, then they'll just wait because they know he can't be kept. And they know, like, Terry Rozier is another guy that he's coming up on year three. He's the 16th overall pick a couple years ago. And his team option is coming up next summer. And the Celtics are going to have to pay, like we talked about, they're going to pay Isaiah. They got to pay Marcus Smart. Are they going to pick up the option for Terry Rozier if he doesn't have an awesome year? No, they're going to let that go. He's got an option. Let's see, Rozier's option next year is for $3 million. That's $3 million that you can kind of protect, possibly keep you further away from the tax. So that's another guy that may not stick around. They may just not pick up his option after 3 years. So is there some frustration? Tiny, tiny bit. But really, when you look at everything that they're getting, they waive these guys to get Hayward. And they're just kind of replacing them with the second round picks that they've made this year. They're bringing in Semi Ojeleye, who looked good in summer league, and they're signing Jason Tatum, and they're signing Abdel Nader from last year's second round. So it's just kind of a rotating second round picks at the end of the bench, and can one of them kind of step up and become something? If not, you cut them and they move on, and maybe they go have a nice career somewhere else. But it's a wild ride on this Danny Ainge roller coaster. He's got so many of these picks that he just kind of, you can take chances and you can do things like this, and you can cut bait if you need to. They're end of the bench guys.
Yeah, it's just fascinating to watch the differences. The Celtics have so many picks, they're just cutting them. The Wizards, I mean, like, the only other player they've drafted for themselves in the last 4 years was Aaron White, who will now this year be spending his third straight year overseas. So it's just the complete opposite. I mean, I mean, part of going to summer league this year from boring because they didn't literally have a draft pick for the second year in a row. So fascinating to watch how Boston has so many guys. Like, well, the hell, we're just going to cut this guy because we've got other stuff, and the Wizards are like, hey,
I think it's just interesting watching the Wizards from now my outside perspective, watching the Wizards not willing to spend into the tax at all. Just they made moves like Bogdanovich was let go because they just didn't want to pay the tax, and they didn't want to buy into what they could. They not have bought into the second round somehow. A guy like Semi Ojeleye, who is a 6'10 beast of a wing, who looked good in summer league, hit 41.5% from three in Vegas. Seems like a guy who might have actually had a chance to make that Wizards bench. Never know. Maybe you could have found a gem in that second round. He would have had more opportunity in Washington. But, I mean, at some point you got to spend the money. And I guess you did with Otto Porter, but you're kind of stuck because you're capped out. And you. This is why I was saying in your show, you're kind of stuck. Like, Brooklyn can structure that contract in any weird way they want. You're stuck. You have to match it, or else John Wall is going to walk because you let one of your three best players go for nothing. So I don't know. It's just weird the way Washington spends the money and their refusal to spend it in other ways. I don't know. I would be decidedly more negative if I was watching the Wizards, because you're like, get better, like. Figure out a way to get better. Like, just for 2 years, spend into the tax and do something to add to that bench and make a move. Keep up with Boston. Make a move on Cleveland. Do something. And then if it doesn't work in 2 years, then you can get down below the tax for a couple of years and try it again or something. But from a free agent perspective, if you're sitting there watching Washington never, ever, ever pay a tax, then you got to sit there and wonder, well, will they ever give me, if I'm a star player, will they ever give me what I really, really need? And part of me thinks that might be going through John Wall's head. Are they ever really, really going to give me what I need to get over the hump?
I think that's totally fair. I'm so not a salary cap expert. I think they are technically in the tax now, but just not by a lot, by a little bit. And it would be the first time ever that that's happened. If ownership changed a few years ago, so it's not all on Ted Leonsis, but it would be the first time ever. And all they could have done really was keep Bogdanovich. I mean, they could technically now sign a guy to a minimum contract that they were supposedly in pursuit of Jamal Crawford. Bogdanovich, to be honest, like, other than the fact that it makes that trade feel better because you gave up a first round pick in that deal, I didn't really have a huge problem with them letting him go play talent-wise. I mean, he was okay. He could shoot, but I don't know. I mean, it wasn't – I wasn't, like, that upset that they didn't give him a multi-year deal based on what we saw last year. No, I think Jody Meeks, they'll hope he stays healthy. So, but you're right. I mean, when you called them being stuck, when I asked people going into the draft kind of where are the Wizards at, I think your answer was pretty spot on. I don't think they're in a bad spot. But they can't. It was really hard for them to move one way or the other. They pretty much had to keep Otto Porter. They didn't have much wiggle room to do much else. Hence the really minimal signings. We'll see.
We'll see. Yeah, that is. I'm looking at the cap right now. That is a pretty expensive roster. That is a pretty expensive roster. But you know, we'll see what happens with. Wow, I can't believe you guys are paying Jan Mahimi $16.5 million. $16.5 million. It just smacked me right in the face. And the Celtics got Aaron Baines for 4.3. Man, the center from the market for centers has just crumbled in today's NBA. This game changed really fast. 2 years ago, or two seasons ago, like last summer, they were handing out, like, we had the Noah and the Mozgov contracts out there. Now, guys can't get paid at all. Dwayne Dedmon is lucky that he got $7.5 million. So it's a wild ride. And you guys are paying Yamahimi 16 and a half.
Whew. What a world. What a world.
Okay. Thanks for giving us the outside perspective, the Wizards perspective from this. Everybody go check out Ben's piece on FanRag Sports. If you go to FanRagSports.com and go to the Celtics page, you'll see it right there. How much stronger have the Celtics become? Interesting outside perspective on that. Be sure to subscribe to us, the Locked On Celtics podcast, wherever you get your shows. Subscribe to Locked On Wizards too. You got to check out and see what the Wizards are one of the main opponents for the Celtics all year long. They are in the top four. Cleveland, Boston, Washington, Toronto. Still the top four in the East, no doubt about it. Maybe the only four in the East, although Milwaukee might have something to say about that. So subscribe to Locked On Wizards and give us ratings. Give us 5 stars because that helps us out a lot. And we really do appreciate the 5-star ratings and the good reviews. That pumps us up in the ratings and in the listings, and more people find us. So do that. Follow Ben on Twitter at Ben Standing. And tune in next time. This has been the Locked On Celtics podcast. We're part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, J. King and Doc.